Good morning, everybody. We'll just get started. Welcome to this morning's performance review and scrutiny committee. Just a reminder that this meeting is recorded and will be made available to the public. Apologies from
Councillor Montgomery and Russell.
Okay, and the order of business is
as set out on the agenda.
Thank you. A reminder that members should declare any interests, and they can do so at any point during the meeting. We'll just move on to the minutes of the previous meeting, pages 3 to 12. Everybody happy that that's an accurate record? Nothing to note. Thank you. Move on to the first of the public reports, which is item 5.1, inspection of Hawthorne Down Primary School, page 13. Grace, thank you.
Thank you. This report outlines the outcome of the inspection of Hawthorne Down Primary School, which was communicated by Education Scotland in their letter dated the 20th of June. Just a bit of background first. We actually appointed a new head teacher to Hawthorne Down Primary School, and that appointment took effect on the 9th of January. Following the departure and retirement of the previous head teacher, there was an interim period of an acting head teacher. Section 2.2 outlines the evaluations for Hawthorne Down Primary. So they evaluated leadership of change, learning, teaching, assessment, ensuring wellbeing, equality and inclusion, and raising attainment and achievement. And the grades that were evaluated were satisfactory for each of those. Section 2.3 outlines some of the key strengths, which I think are important, which I'd like to outline before I go into the very important areas for improvement. So they noted the good start of the newly appointed head teacher in making immediate improvements to the school, which was good. Children who enthusiastically spoke about strategies to support their learning, and that was through the Visible Learning Programme. The positive relationships across the school, and also the staff who were engaged in practitioner inquiry. However, we would be expecting, and the National Improvement Framework would expect, that all schools would achieve at least good or better. So the important points for improvement that are outlined there in Section 2.4 are critical. In particular, improving the quality of learning, teaching and assessment across the school, so we've been working closely with the school on this. The raising attainment on literacy and numeracy, and importantly the conversations that were taking place between teacher judgment, because teachers are now expected to judge progress through the broad general education associated with curriculum for excellence level, so that's something that's quite new for practitioners to do. But they also spoke about developing curricular pathways to meet the needs of all pupils. So what we've done is we've put in place two main monitoring points for the school, one 6 months after the main inspection and one after a year. So there will be formal reports that are coming forward in order for us to satisfy ourselves that progress has actually been made. We were quite pleased that Education Scotland, who would be within their rights to do a return visit when they have evaluations of satisfactory, that they were trusting at this point that we could make those changes at the school because of the newly appointed head and the plan that was actually in place. So Section 4 outlines the recommendations, to note the content of the inspector's report, to note the very important further areas of development, and also the positive steps by Education Scotland to allow us to actually undertake some very important improvements.
Thank you. Any questions or comments? Councillor Baird.
Thank you. It was just to ask, with the report being published in June, just what's been achieved so far in getting up to a good standard?
One of the most important things that the school have done is to put in place a permanent senior management team. So we now have a permanent head teacher and three deputy head teachers. So the school's entitled to two deputy head teachers, but they chose through their pupil equity funding that they would like an additional deputy head teacher who's going to take forward a lot of the work that the inspector said needed to happen. So a robust action plan. Our two school group managers are also going in this afternoon to check on the progress of that, and in 2 weeks time they will do a formal review, almost like a mini inspection, so that we can check that progress is actually being made, and then at the end of a year we'll produce a full inspection report, so we'll almost undertake an inspection again in order to monitor the progress that the school has made.
Sorry, Councillor.
Could I ask what the score of satisfactory means in terms of which quartile this school sits in compared to the Scottish population?
It wouldn't necessarily at this point with these indicators sit in quartiles, but it would be under what we would be expecting. So our basic expectation would be good or above. So we would be saying for each of those indicators, for us that would be an unsatisfactory outcome for an inspection. And it's now our duty to make sure that each of those satisfactories turn into good. So one of the new benchmarks under the National Improvement Framework would be the expectation that all of our schools are at least good or better. For us in Midlothian, our aspiration would be very good and excellent.
Councillor Johnson.
Hi, I was unaware that we did league tables to compare schools with schools, as Councillor Smeal has suggested, but I wonder how it compares to its virtual school.
So for primaries at this point, there's not virtual schools, so that's something that Insight has implemented for secondary schools. The government are currently looking at the creation of a dashboard. So what we're seeing through the collection of curriculum for excellence levels that were published for the first time in December last year will be published again this year. So we will begin to see some comparative data coming through from that. And also the government will be implementing the new standardised assessments. So that for the first time in Scotland will be the very one assessment tool that will be implemented across every primary school in Scotland until such times we wouldn't have enough robust comparative evidence through the broad general to make any distinctions in terms of league tables.
Thanks, Dr. Vickers. Happy to move on. Item 5.2, page 21 of your papers, is the Midlothian Council Quarter 1 Performance Report. Kenneth Laurie.
Thank you, Chair. So this sets out the progress in the first quarter under each of the five themes of the Single Midlothian Plan, and of course the Council approved the latest version of the Single Midlothian Plan at its meeting in June, and at the heart of that are the priorities around about tackling some of the inequalities which exist in our communities, inequalities in terms of learning, in terms of health outcomes, and in terms of economic circumstances. So in terms of the detail under each of these themes, of course these are more fully explored in the service reports, which you'll be considering over the course of the morning. So I'm not going to go into detail on each of the five themes at this point. I'm, of course, happy to deal with any questions that members might have. I suppose what I tend to do, as I often do at these meetings, is focus rather on the challenges which are set out in the report. And there's, you know, there's common themes amongst these challenges, challenges around about funding pressure, certainly, challenges around about capacity, challenges around about the pace of demographic change and our ability to deal with that, most particularly in relation to health and social care, but also very much in the area of education. In terms of the financial challenge more broadly, it is about how we transform the council in the context of the financial pressures we face, how we work better with our communities, how we continue to improve key outcomes whilst making very substantial savings. And, of course, a lot of work is currently being done to address this challenge. You've seen reports coming through Council, and, of course, the work of the Business Transformation Steering Group relates to this as well. And there is no doubt that, not just for this Council, but you'll see it in the broader media as well, that the critical challenge for the foreseeable future is ensuring we can live within our reducing means whilst retaining the transformational capacity in the organisation to make the kind of changes in the way we provide services which will enable us to have sustainable and good services in the future. So there's a lot of detail in the report. I'm happy to take any questions. And as I say, a lot of that detail will also be set out in the subsequent service-based reports across the agenda.
Thank you, Kenneth. Any questions or comments at this stage? Councillor Baird.
Thank you. One of the things the report notes is that we're off target for absences and sickness. What I want to ask was, can we get a bit more detail on why that is? Is it due to medical sickness, or is it mental health concerns. Also in relation to the announcements from other councils with coming job losses, is this a trend that's going to increase?
I mean, in terms of sickness, I suppose two things I'd say by way of introduction. In terms of teacher sickness, Midlothian has the lowest rate of sickness of all 32 councils, so that's an area where we do very well. In terms of more sickness across the whole organisation, I think we lie around about 10th, so our performance is reasonably good, but I think our collective view as senior management team is it's not good enough. And the reason, and you'll see this on the figures, that the reason we've set the target this year, which we have, is really to try and drive down that level of sickness. Last year was 11.5 days. Our target is 8. So whilst our position has improved, we're not yet in line with that target. You'll see, as you see the various reports during the course of the morning, the level of sickness varies greatly across the organisation. I mean, in areas of, I think, of our care workforce, sickness has been a real challenge. In some of our frontline services, it's been a real challenge. And what we do have, and what we have agreed with the unions following our work on reviewing the terms and conditions when we reviewed pay, which was June of 2016 when that was introduced, is we do have more robust mechanisms in place, particularly in terms of short-term frequent sickness, which is a significant issue in some areas. In terms of the type of sickness, my colleagues may be able to help more in the detail of that, but I do think that in common with issues across the public sector, indeed more widely, we are seeing more sickness that relates to stress and mental health. I don't think that is surprising in an organisation which is under very significant pressure, as this one is, in common with many other organisations. So I don't see that trend changing. What's important in terms of our response to that and in terms of the kind of support we have for employees is we're doing everything we can to identify these issues at an early stage, to put the support in place for employees and really to try and manage down that sickness figure, because it is a significant problem for the council, and particularly in areas like, for example, social care, where we have statutory requirements in terms of the staffing complement we have. So if people are off sick, then we need to backfill. We're perhaps paying agency costs, and that, of course, is a significant element in terms of potential overspends that you see coming through as well. In terms of the issue round about staffing reductions, and there's a very dramatic figure reported for Angus Council in the press this morning. I think they were saying reducing their workforce by a fifth over 3 years. That we will need to reduce the level of our workforce is absolutely without doubt, and we will have to do that significantly. We also have to do it carefully. I mean, we know that in areas such as early years or care, that our future requirements are going to be greater than our current requirements, so we will have additional staff in these areas. Inevitably, then, there will also be other areas of the business which are not expanding and where we will have to make staff reductions. We will be reporting to Council in the near future in terms of our overall workforce strategy, and on the back of that, we will be looking to bring forward proposals to reduce staffing in the areas where we will not be seeing that future expansion. I'm not prepared to put a figure on it. I think that the idea that one might take a fifth of the workforce out in a three-year period to me seems absolutely inconceivable, though I haven't seen the details of the Angus proposal. It's also worth remembering we are the fastest growing council, so we will inevitably be taking out less workforce than some others, particularly councils which are seeing a drop in population. But that will need to take out significant workforce and numbers of staff over the next number of years. It's absolutely inevitable.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments at this stage? No. Happy to move on to individual reports. Move to 5.3, Adult Social Care, page 31. Alison.
Thank you, Chair. If I just take you through a few of the highlights of the report, and I will try and touch on some of the workforce issues as part of my report as we go through, but there may be further questions as a result of that. In that broader sense, in terms of how we're looking to ensure that we're delivering excellence across the directorate, we've, through our strategy and the delivery plan that we have as part of Health and Social Care Directorate, do outline a major programme of service changes which are designed to promote prevention and recovery, and three major programmes of work that we have ongoing at this point in time that we'll touch on as we move through are a review of our learning disability day services, which is a fairly significant area of work that we're looking to redesign and ensure that we're delivering best value, but also in ensuring that we're meeting people's needs in the most appropriate way, around our care at home services, and we'll move on as we go through in terms of the challenges that we're currently facing within our care at home services, and a redesign of care packages, which links very much to the efficiency targets that we have. The vast majority of the spend within health and social care is spent on delivering care packages to individual and people. So about how we reshape and rescope those is the only way that we can realistically ensure that we're meeting the efficiencies that we need to meet. We've very much set up a programme of realistic care, realistic expectations. It's about how we shape those conversations that we're having with individuals about what we are able to deliver and how we are able to support people in a meaningful way. And a couple of the examples that we've done of that recent in terms of activity includes the council approval that we've had for the fair allocation of care policy, our transport policy, and more recently our day service policy, which sets out very clearly about how we can have a transparent and equitable resource allocation to individuals who have assessed needs. Move forward, integration. One of the key areas of integration work that we're looking at the moment certainly is the development of a partnership workforce plan. The council as a whole is obviously looking at that workforce plan, but for us in the integration agenda, we're needing to ensure that our workforce plan covers council staff, NHS staff, but also the third sector. We commission around 60% of our work externally, which means that the impact on the third sector workforce is as significant for us as the internal workforce. So there is a fairly significant workforce plan that's been taken forward and that we will be able to share. It's around October time that will be going to the Integrated Joint Board, and we will be able to share more widely at that point. Some of the challenges around our workforce plan is an ageing workforce, and that does actually have an impact on the sickness absence stats that we're talking about. Care is a physical demanding post, and it's also emotionally a very demanding post as well, which means that they are often those frontline posts that we see high level of sickness in. And actually there are ways that we support some of that through the physiotherapists, through Healthy Working Lives, to try and encourage people to support and maintain their own health. But it is a challenge for us, not just in the care workforce. Our district nursing workforce is another one that's also facing challenges in terms of being an ageing workforce. But it is something that, as part of our workforce plan, it's about how we attract younger people into the profession. In terms of older people, some of our biggest challenges at the moment are around care at home. We are continuing to have problems with a couple of our third sector providers, which is having an impact both on our reablement service internally, keeping on packages of care for longer than they should. We expect reablement to keep packages for around 6 weeks, but has a knock-on impact on our delayed discharge figures as well, as obviously a clean flow through all of our services is imperative for us to be able to meet that demand. Under the capacity and quality, I do mention at that point that there are two care homes that were under large-scale investigation as part of adult support and protection. We are now down to one care home that's subject to large-scale investigation, but that does create challenges for us again in terms of the demand and flow of services. But there's very much positive work that's also going on in older people in terms of reshaping and redesigning the work that we need to do, and a large-scale recommissioning exercise that we'll be looking at around how we deliver care at home in a very different way to meet the demands, and locality-based work that's starting in Penicuik, which is around ensuring that we have all of the key players that are working in that area, from GPs, district nurses, our care home staff, social workers, OTs, to really work at how we can best support that group of people. So rather than us having multiple visits in a day or multiple professionals involved, about how we can get that work together. And there's a key programme for those key staff involved over an 8-week three-month period to ensure that we're best looking at how we can meet the demands of that community and what we can learn from that and how we can roll that out across the rest of Midlothian. Within learning disabilities, mention of TV at court, that has now opened and first people have moved in. The first person who moved in is so excited to be out of hospital and into their new home. They are exceptionally house proud. I think in their first day they'd hoovered four times. They are welcome to visit me at any point in time. But it's really been to see the benefits for the people that are beginning to move in, and the planned programme of who we have moving into that accommodation is really, really positive. We do have one flat that's designed as a place of safety. That's to help us where we've got a crisis situation that would otherwise result in either an out-of-area placement, an exceedingly high-cost package, or a hospital admission. And we actually, despite the fact that we only moved the first person in last Monday, managed to move someone into our place of safety on the Friday of last week. So it's been a good use of that resource in a fairly quick turnaround that we've been able to do. Moving through sensory, physical disability, sensory loss, there's been a lot of work going on around awareness training, particularly around sensory impairment, that's been multi-agency, so we're also ensuring that fire service, police, GP receptionists, GP practices, so it's been very much a focus on how we can build awareness and do consultation on British Sign Language National Plan as being part of that key work as well. Within self-directed support, we are continuing to embed that as business as usual. There will be a further report that's very specific about self-directed support that will be coming to Council as the Audit Scotland report was released just last week. What I would say from a Midlothian perspective is in the 15-16 stats, that's the latest verified stats, Midlothian was third across Scotland in terms of the ranking, in terms of its implementation and delivery of self-directed support. So although I think nationally the Audit Scotland report wasn't what you would suggest was a glowing report on the implementation of self-directed support, I think within Midlothian we really have taken taken that ahead in a really positive way across children and adult services. Within substance misuse, mentioning there more about peer support, the development of the recovery hub, there is a paper that's coming to Council and there is a members briefing around the recovery hub in September. But what we're really looking to do is how we can embed peer support as part of the development of that recovery hub. It's been really shown to be valuable in terms of the approach that we're taking to recovery and rehabilitation. Having people who've had that lived experience of going into recovery is really beneficial. So we've got the Recovery Cafe in Midlothian, we've got the Recovery College, and we think that by embedding peer support workers within our professional teams that we'll be able to take that to the next level as we're moving forward. Within criminal justice, we're currently reviewing our unpaid work service, very much about it's for individuals who are receiving a community payback order with a condition of unpaid work, very much wanting to make it move to a learning and development pathway that we can really support people to move out of the circumstances that they have. A good example of that is the rural skills programme that our unpaid work team currently deliver. It's about a one-week programme and it's delivered up at the... I've forgotten the name of the college.
New Battle Abbey.
Thank you very much. At New Battle Abbey. And we've had a number of people who've gone through that one-week placement who've then gone on to get a full-time placement on that course. So it's about supporting people to see the difference that they can make in their life. And certainly in the 15-16, our Community Payback Order report, annual report, we delivered over 18,000 hours of unpaid work for 250 clients over that period of time. So it's a good area of work and development that we have. Not included within the report, but would be helpful to point out to you because it covers all of these areas, is that Midlothian has been notified that we will be subject to an inspection from the Care Inspectorate around our adult support and protection. It's a national inspection, but there are six local authorities that have partnership areas that have been picked to be subject to a more intensive inspection, and Midlothian is one of those. Inspectors will be on site week beginning the 27th of November, and there's information that we need to submit to them by the 22nd of this month in preparation for that inspection.
Thank you. That was a very thorough update. Any questions or comments, Councillor?
Thank you. I note with positivity about the criminal justice and the community justice making an a good impact on people's lives. But I wonder, as the new system that we introduced last year in, for reoffending, has that made a difference in reoffending rates in Midlothian, not offending overall?
I don't have those exact stats at the moment, but I think we're at the early stages of the reducing reoffending work, and it is very much about that broader partnership working that we are undertaking, working alongside colleagues for substance misuse, mental health, children's services. I think there is a real commitment and understanding within the board in terms of how we're taking forward some of that work, but as yet there's not stats. It's quite a quick turnaround from the shadow board arrangements and us going live in this year for us to have stats that new way of working has had an impact as yet, but we are currently working on the more up-to-date stats, so we will begin to see the trend of that work moving forward.
Councillor Winchester.
I've been made aware that there are over 1,000 dementia people who've been diagnosed with dementia in Midlothian. Are we actually doing anything specifically designed at them to help keep them in their own houses?
Yeah, we have. We were one of the test sites for the development of the Eight Pillars model of community support for people with dementia. So we have an integrated dementia team, which has CPNs, the consultant psychiatrists, psychology, occupational therapists, social workers as part of that team. What we also have is workers that ensure that within that first year, that early year of diagnosis, so as soon as there's diagnosis, that you'll have someone who will work with you in that first 12-month period. Often that's the most critical for you to be able to plan what you need to do, to be able to manage safely in your own home, have the right supports around you, become aware of what some of the challenges are and do some of that work. So there's work with Vocal that we're doing in that earlier period where we're looking at exploring things like power of attorney, which means that things will be easier for people longer term. Midlothian broadly has a commitment, whether it's someone who has dementia or otherwise, that we'll support people in their own home for as long as possible with a lesser reliance on care homes. So we've seen a reduction or a stabilising of the number of care home placements despite a growing older age population, and it's ensuring that we're really only using care homes when it's end of life care. So it's very much about supporting people to maintain that very good work alongside Alzheimer's, and Alzheimer's work very closely with our dementias team to ensure that we've got some good supports in the community. There's still more that we can do, but I think we've got a good basis for that work.
Thank you. Councillor Johnson.
On page 43, when we're talking about older people and the increase in the delayed discharges, and I know that that will be directly related to care at home, but what are we actually doing to, as a focus on the people who are delayed in hospital?
There's a number of strands of work that we're undertaking at the moment. So there's a weekly bed meeting that's chaired by Alistair Short as Head of Older People and Primary Care, where we run through everybody who's delayed on that basis. We've allocated a primary element of work. One of the challenges, or one of the issues that we've had recently, is we're now using Midlothian Community Hospital, which is really positive because it means that when people are in hospital, they are still local to the local community. But it's about us looking at ensuring that we've got the right pathways in place to ensure that we can get people out of that. So there's a real focus locally on ensuring that we've got our hospital in-reach team, a service manager's taking key responsibility for this area of work, and the hospital staff. We've increased some of the rehab facility in terms of our physiotherapy and OT assistance within that to ensure that we can pull people out as quickly as possible. But the biggest one of the other challenges we have in delays is people who are waiting for guardianship. That equates to around 20% of the delays that we have. Now, we're looking at how we can speed that up, where it's a council who's applying for guardianship, and actually when it's the local authority that's applying, it's generally quite a quick turnaround for us moving that. Where it's a family member who's applying for that guardianship, we're less in control of the timeframes for that because it's the family member who's working. There's often an application for legal aid through that process, and there's not as much that we can do to influence that process, but that's often where where we see some of the longest delays in hospital is where we're waiting for powers for somebody. But our biggest challenge does remain on the lack of capacity in our care at home service. We have new providers that are coming on as part of a framework agreement that will be able to offer care hours from the 1st of October. So there's been some significant work about increasing some of that capacity, so we hope to begin to see some of the difference around that time.
Councillor Smale.
Yes, my subject is residential care costs for those who are self-funders. My understanding is that the Council has increased its rates by over 40% for those who are self-funding. There has been some amelioration of this by putting the effective date back to January next year. But it does raise the question, if the argument is that we were far below market rates before, why Midlothian got into this position, which results in this rather difficult escalation for those who are caught up?
Midlothian Council is only able to charge the amount that it costs to deliver a service, so there's no point that we can charge for services that mean that we would be making a profit of any kind within that nature. We also will often look at doing the full cost recovery based on the budget position. Now, the charges for new buyers care home, some people will be aware that we had been facing an overspend position on new buyers for a couple of years, and that it was only in the last couple of years that we had, through a significant service review, introduced nurses into the care home and changed the staffing structure to ensure that we had a sustainable service and that we were able to open 24 dementia beds as part of that unit. As part of that process, it obviously meant that we had increased the base cost of new buyers. So some of it was that we had been doing... Part of the significant increase was around the fact that we significantly increased the budget for new buyers, and as we were able to look at full cost recovery, that was why we had seen such a spike in that particular financial year. There had been an increase the previous year that we hadn't fully implemented because we were aware of the potential challenges for self-funding individuals at that point in time, but we did do it. The charge is in line with other local with other self-funding charges that are available, but in part it was because of the increased base cost for new buyers that suddenly there was such an increase in the charge at that point in time, and not down to the fact that we weren't keeping a check of what we were able to charge at that point. It was the fact that the base budget had increased with the introduction of nurses primarily.
Thanks for that explanation, which from a commercial point of view is very clear, but in terms of individuals caught up in this, did they not have a reasonable expectation that there would not be such exceptional rises?
You're right. It would have been, there were other ways for us doing that. We could have looked at the introduction, which I think is the position that we've reached now, that for people who are now moving in, that will be charged at that rate. But for people who were already living within the care home, that we'll do that over a phased basis. I think communication could have been significantly improved with the existing people who were resident within Midlothian.
Thank you.
Thanks. Before we move on to the next item, colleagues, if everybody's in agreement, I have noticed, or it's come to my attention, that education performance report is item 5.8, which is quite far down the agenda, and Dr Vickers obviously spoke on the first item, and I'm keen not to keep officers here any longer than necessary, and I'm sure you'll all agree that their time is money. So if there's no objections, I'd like to move on to 5.8, which is the education performance report, and then take the next items in subsequent order if there's no objections. Okay. Sorry, Dr. Vickers, to put you on the spot and move that up, if that's okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Committed to the creation of a world-class education system through excellence and equity, this report for this quarter focuses really what we're going to be doing for the year ahead. And it's an important year for us because the theme for the year ahead is Mind the Gap, taking a closer look at progression, progression, progression. And from the 1st of August, we have new duties under the Education Act that was passed in 2016, which actually places a formal duty on us to reduce inequalities, to implement the National Improvement Framework, but also a different set of planning and reporting formats for us. So you'll find that some of the things that I say throughout this report might be just slightly different, and that's because then the new Act commences really from the 1st of August. So in terms of the National Improvement Framework drivers, I've embedded them into our three strategic priorities, one being raise and attainment and achievement, the second being the learning provision, and that's when we look deeply into the curriculum that we offer in schools and how we're actually moderating the outcome in terms of children's progression. And what's very important to us in Midlothian is leadership and ensuring that we have the right instructional leadership at classroom level, but also the leadership within our schools. So on pages 1 and 2, I've outlined the specifics in terms of outcomes that we're looking for this year and moving ahead. In terms of raising attainment and achievement, I spoke very briefly within the Hawthorne Den inspection report about the progress through the broad general education. So there'll be very intensive focus on outcomes by the end of P1, P4, P7 and S3 through that new framework. They will all be gathered, published nationally in December of each year, but also on parent zone. Every single individual school, every primary school across Scotland will have their results published for each individual school. So that will be the first time that we start to see that information coming through. So it's very, very important that we work hard to ensure that teacher professional judgment is actually in line with the standardised assessments. In terms of the senior phase, we will bring a further report back to December Council outlining the achievements in terms of attainment measures at the end of S4, 5 and 6. But last Tuesday, the Positive Destinations, the Sustained Destinations report was actually published, and we were really pleased to find out that we've moved from 27th place last year to 7th place. So that's a 4.9% improvement, with our sustained destinations now actually sitting at 93.6%. So that's of fundamental importance to us in Midlothian. So you know that the initial destinations, we reported 95.1%. It's really good to know that fewer children and young adults are falling away from that and they're able to sustain their destinations. In terms of learning provision, we've been taking a much closer look at curriculum, because through Curriculum for Excellence we would like to ensure that more young people stay on to the end of S6, so making sure that the curriculum is more flexible, more work placements, more liaison with college and with universities. And we've had been really positive meetings with the University of Edinburgh in particular to roll out our idea about the Centres of Excellence. So that's really subject specific excellence support for those children who want to move into specific professions, including digital, data and STEM being the three really important emerging trends coming through. Ensuring wellbeing, equity and inclusion, we've undertaken an inclusion review last year. That was a very difficult thing to do, but we need to know that we're putting in the right support at the right time, particularly to interrupt the cycle of poverty, and that's something that we're rolling out throughout our three targeted communities. And in terms of leadership and management, we had a really good leadership programme last year called Uplifting Leadership, which was based on the work of Professor Andy Hargreaves, who's professor at Harvard, and we'll be rolling out year two of that programme, because it's really important that our head teachers hear firsthand about world-class interventions that are happening. And just in May there, we actually had Avis Glaze over from Canada, and she's one of the international advisors to the Scottish Government. So that's been really useful for us in terms of that continuing professional development. In terms of emerging challenges and risks, there are many for education at this time, so I've just listed all of the policy changes and the number of consultations that are actually taking place. The one that's currently live is the fair funding, and obviously the publication of the governance review next steps, which happened in June. So happy to take any questions.
Any questions or comments? No? Happy to note the report. Move on. Thank you, Grace. 5.4 Children's Services, page 47 in your paper. Mary. Thank you. Is there something in the water at Children's Services? Any other questions or comments for Mary on this report? Nope. Excellent. Happy to move on then to item 5.5, Communities and Economy, page 55 of your papers. Ian. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Probably just highlight a few things rather than going through the whole report, but obviously there's any issues, members can just pick me up through questions. We're in the position of having a fairly strong development plan situation. We've got a local development plan, which is going to come back up to council shortly at the end of the month, recommending for adoption. That's the end process, the end part of a long process to get a plan adopted. The advantage of having an up-to-date local development plan cannot be overstated. It provides certainty on housing provision and housing numbers over the next, 15 years, I would suggest. It provides a much better position to start planning for infrastructure, which I'll touch on later. And essentially, it means the council's local planning authority is in control of making sure that development takes place in the right place and stopping it where you don't want it to be. So it's a very important step, that. In terms of developing stronger engagement with communities, really that's the catalyst for that is the Community Empowerment Act 2015, which, as you know, provides local communities with a lot more powers in relation to their relationship with the public authorities in such things as seeking to take buildings in terms of asset transfer, but also in terms of areas like participatory budgeting. And the work of the council currently in-house is to work through what's known as a programme of developing services with communities, and that really is taking a lead from the Christie Commission principles and the Community Empowerment Act to look at the way in which we engage more fully and more effectively with communities who have a greater role to play. City deal for Edinburgh and South East Scotland, that deal was, or the heads of terms were signed up on the 20th of July, and now it's the fairly long process and detailed process of getting business plans and sorted out in relation to projects and to set up the governance arrangements, which would be in the form of a joint committee. Really, in terms of the detailed sign-off, that's unlikely to be until probably early next year. So in terms of money flowing into projects, it would be at least the next financial year before that would happen. Looking at £600 million over 15 years from the two, equally from the two governments, the UK and Scottish, and the with the addition of other monies coming in, it's about a £1.1 billion programme. Just a reminder that that is to accelerate the economy, to boost economic growth, but also to ensure that economic growth is spread equally across all communities within the region so that certain communities don't get left behind in terms of the economic uplift. Borders Rail, there's still a fair bit of activity. We're coming up to the second anniversary of it opening, and there will be a bit of activity around that. But in terms of inward investment, marketing, website development, tourism development, there's a fair bit of investment going in, mainly from the Blueprint Group. So it's money which has been allocated through Scottish Government and Scottish Enterprise, which is being used for a lot of that developmental work across mainly Midlothian and Scottish borders. There are also specific projects. So in terms of what's happening at Gore Bridge in relation to the station building and in relation to public realm improvements, linking in with the conservation improvements, then that's a project which we expect to see coming on stream next year. And there's also the current master planning work being undertaken at Newton Grange Town Centre and at Stob Hill. Business Gateway, which is within the economic development team and which is fully funded externally through government, I'm pleased to say is experiencing a lot of activity, which is just as well. It is currently meeting targets for startups, for advice to growth, growing businesses, and for businesses going into account management by Scottish Enterprise. Just to touch on the challenges or the key ones, the biggest one is infrastructure to accommodate the scale and the speed of new housing development in Mid Lothian, particularly education and health, and that's pretty much what we're hearing from communities as much as from everybody else. And the local plan is a basis upon which we can plan effectively to try and ensure we don't get into difficulties on that. In terms of transport, the A701, A702, or the A701 Relief Road and A72 Spur is now critically important. It's endorsed in the local plan by the reporters, Scottish Government reporters. We are now in the process of issuing initial contracts for work on the A701. That is not the construction phase. It is the design it's the design planning element for traffic and transportation and also for the assessment of ground conditions. We had some initial ground conditions, desk study work done to prove it for putting in the plan, but we now need to have the really detailed investigations. Those contracts are now being let, fully paid for by developer contributions. And part of that programme, the A702 link, which would run from the A703 to the A702, is critical in unlocking strategic transport access to the bush area, which is probably our most significant high-value employment area in Mid Lothian. I mentioned Business Gateway a minute ago. One of the things we're finding is that when the lifeblood of the Mid Lothian economy is the small and medium-sized enterprises, which is up to 250 staff. Actually, we're talking less than 20 in many cases. There are very, very many of those businesses. One of the issues Business Gateway are finding is access to premises. Just premises for these small companies is now becoming at a premium, which means two things. One, we need to stop reallocating employment land, allocating employment to other uses. And the other thing is we need to start financially trying to unlock the difficulty of having premises provided which people can move into. That's one of the areas we're looking at. There's a fair bit of action to support maintaining strong and viable town centres, which certainly need some attention in relation to a number of factors. And you'll know that there'll be a presentation to all members' planning committee on the 3rd of October. But just to cover that, Gore Bridge, we've got what I mentioned earlier, the Borders Rail line money and the conservation area money, which is seeing a difference there, and hopefully people have noticed that. We are likely to receive, we're doing the preparatory work for a £3.5 million scheme for Penicuik, which would start next year. We're working with the In It Together group at Mayfield in relation to Mayfield Centre, and of course there's the Newton Grange master planning underway. So in terms of where we are as a service, we are seeking to meet the demands of a growing, rapidly growing population and a growing economy, and the nature of that will impact directly on the frontline services of my particular area, because four of the six are statutory: planning, building standards, environmental health and trading standards. We also need to have capacity for issues that can arise, two of which I'll just mention briefly: the gas ingress into CO2 gas ingress into properties at Gore Bridge. That's the sort of thing that can just take over a section like environmental health. And environmental health have also had, or the food team have had, a fair bit of activity to be involved with the McSween's food safety alert, which I'm glad to say is now back on track and going in the right direction. But those things can make a big difference in terms of impact on service. That's what I was going to say by way of summary. Happy to take anything from members.
Thank you, Ian. Any questions or comments? Councillor Cassidy.
Thank you, Chair. Just to ask when the next report about the Dalkeith regeneration, town centre regeneration report is coming to Council.
Well, I'll probably, Chair, is refer on, and Gary Sherritt's going to be presenting shortly, and it's really something in Gary Sherritt's side of which he's handling, but so I'll probably leave it to him to cover that.
Okay.
Thank you for that. I'm hearing time and time and time again, not complaints about the house building, but complaints about the infrastructure, as you said. And the biggest one seems to be the lack of GPs. Now, I know that's not something that the council itself can do much about, but are we working with the NHS to increase or try and get the GPs to come into Mid Lothian? The other thing is that I've had a few complaints about is the Bonnyrigg, with all the extra houses, is the traffic problems now in Bonnyrigg at peak times. And is there anything in the plans that's going to alleviate this?
In terms of GPs, Councillor is absolutely right. There's a limit to how much we can do on this in terms of through the sort of planning process. Put simply, if there's a need for additional land and premises, bricks and mortar, that's something we can try and secure through developer contributions if we see that as a direct consequence of the development. So that's pretty straightforward. And there are examples of that across Scotland where that can happen. But the issue, I understand it here, I'm told, is not the bricks and mortar and the land. It's actually getting the GPs in themselves. We obviously work with the Integrated Joint Board, and I think there's an advantage in obviously that board having the direct involvement of both the council and the NHS. So there's an advantage there. I know that the IJB are particularly concerned about this issue. I understand there's a number of measures being taken, including, for example, at Newton Grange, where there's additional provision being put in, and I think that's that they're planning to do that elsewhere. There is an issue in terms of just actually appointing GPs into surgeries, and I know that the structure of the way in which the NHS is structured can cause a few constraints in that area. But other than working with the IJB consistently, is probably the best thing we can do from a planning perspective. What I would say is that, and it's been put to me a number of times, you know, can the council refuse planning applications on the basis there isn't sufficient health facilities available? The answer is no. We've simply overturned that appeal almost straight away. Bonnyrigg traffic. In terms of the distribution of traffic from new development, if we're looking at Hope Field and that area on the southern side and what will be the extensions, then there is a distributor road out to the A7, and because something like half of the journeys to work are northwards into Edinburgh, and that, so the route out is a distributor road, which is why it was put in, down to the A7, up to Sheriff Hall, which is a problem in itself, and then onwards. The difficulties that I get informed about are up at the sort of top end, the Last Way, the Laird and Dog, and all around there, where the bridge is essentially the constraint. There's no plans for improvements through that bit of Last Way, the Laird and Dog, and not that I'm aware of, and certainly not that we're taking developer contributions for. There's not much I can offer in terms of that, other than to say that the way we manage traffic from the new development will be to try and minimise its impact in terms of trying to go through Bonnyrigg and through Last Way, going northwards. It'll try and get them to use the strategic network.
Thank you. I'll just take hands in order, so Councillor Johnson and then Councillor Smale.
Thank you very much. It's maybe not just a question, but more a statement. I think talking down GPs in the NHS will definitely not attract young GPs and their families to come and live and work in Midlothian. And I think what we need to do is to promote Midlothian as a place to grow, live, work and learn. And talking it down will certainly chase GPs away and not attract them. And I wish some of my colleagues would bear that in mind.
Councillor Smale.
Can I repeat Councillor McMillan's, Councillor Winchester's comment? We've not been talking down Midlothian. We think it's a wonderful place for GPs to come to. We're just surprised that so few are now coming from England to Scotland following the referendum. I do have a question. Last year, we talked at the Audit Committee about Business Gateway, and following the financial crash of 2008, Midlothian started to take financial relationships with a number of small businesses in the area. You reported then on the performance of our portfolio. I wonder if you could update us as to how well these financial investments are performing.
Apologies, Chair. I need to get a bit more information in relation to, just so I can help here.
I understand that a number of small business loans and possibly equity investments were made by the council.
Apologies, sorry. The East of Scotland Investment Fund, which has now become Business Loan Scotland, do apologise. We have, I mean, I would say that the performance of those companies to whom we have lent has been patchy. In some cases, very good. I think in two cases, companies that received business loans are now account managed by Scottish Enterprise, which is a big step up. I think there's two in particular, which we would say we're very proud of that that's happened. There are a number of companies who have done what they expected to do in terms of developing capital investment, taking on more staff, have repaid their loans. That's fine. There are a number who have defaulted on their loans, either by going bust or by us having to put those loans on ice for the moment whilst they try and survive. The reason, I think, for that happening is that, obviously, this is discussion which the council know from the audit committee discussions, that to some extent we're almost a lender of last resort with some of the business loans that we come out with, in as much as people are putting some of their own money in, they've had the bank loan, the bank's not going any further than that, they've still got a gap, and we aim to fill that. So to some extent we do have failures. We've tried to keep the failures to a minimum. I think our failure rate compares favourably with other authorities. We've now had the move from East of Scotland Investment Fund. What's happened is the East and the West and the one for the Highlands has all come together as the Business Loan Scotland, which is the new arrangement. It hasn't changed what we do. We still have a core amount of funding, which is for Midlothian, and it's not simply offered elsewhere. We have to work within the Business Loan Scotland arrangements. What has happened is that the top figure for loan has gone up potentially from 50 to £100,000. But the £100,000 approvals need approval at Business Loan Scotland board. 50 and below can be agreed at Midlothian level. And what we would do is we would continue, unless otherwise asked, to bring forward the business loans applications and recommendations to members, usually at Cabinet, for a decision.
Councillor Smale.
Can I follow that up? There isn't any record in the papers we have of the performance of this portfolio, and I particularly wonder, now we have the Tyne-esque leader programme, whether we should be seeing in this forum on a regular basis the financial performance of these assets we have, which are essentially exposures to private companies.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine, Chair. Happy to provide that on both Leader and on Business Loans Scotland.
Good. Happy to note that as an action. Councillor Beard.
Thank you. There were two things you noted in the report. It was working with the In It Together group in Mayfield and also the working to prevent land that's for employment and businesses being converted then into other uses. My question was, in light of a planning permission that was for Mayfield Town Centre, with the proposal to replace the Lime Kiln Inn with 20 flats, I wonder why that was able to go through planning and why I was required to then call it to council for scrutiny when it kind of flies in the face of a couple of things you mentioned there that we're trying to prevent.
The stock answer often when the plans are in a corner is, each application on its merits. Now, to some extent, that takes us to some extent, but I think probably the issue is, without trying to split hairs here, what I think is important is that over time, the council has allocated through its local plans land for employment use specifically. And we've also had so it's new land for employment, and also it said where there's established employment areas where existing factories and offices are, that it would continue to maintain that use even if those companies went bust or whatever, or the land became available. In this particular case, I don't want to get into talking about a particular planning application, but let me just say, in instances where you have land which is not necessarily in formal employment use or allocated for that use, then it is more difficult if it's within the built-up area to resist applications for what might call acceptable alternative uses, of which housing might be one, of which a shop might be another. So in answer to your question, I think the policy basis should be to retain what I would call bona fide employment land in employment use and the allocated sites. If you have other sites that come forward which we can apply that process to, that's fine. But I think where there's a strong case for alternative use, it's sometimes difficult to resist.
Councillor Smail and then Councillor Alexander.
On the subject of the lime kilns application, there's perhaps a more general concern to do with the planning process. What was represented to us by the Community Council was that they had objected to this as it was originally presented as a planning application. The developer then withdrawn the planning application and then quickly submitted another one that looked almost exactly the same. But at this point, somehow, Mayfield Community Council dropped out of the list of consultees. Now, this may be a communications problem, but it certainly upset the Community Council. They did not have a chance, they felt, to object to the second proposition, which had all the essential characteristics of the first.
Yeah, I mean, there's the statutory process and what applicants are able to do. So an applicant can withdraw their planning application at any time, at any stage in the process, and they're at liberty to submit a fresh application. If they do that, then in terms of the rules, somebody who's made an objection to the first application, if they're still concerned about the matter, would need to make an objection to the second application. What I would say is that, and we get this from time to time, and particularly where you've got applications that are being reported to Planning Committee, what we would say in the background section of the report is there was a previous application, it was withdrawn, it was effectively for the same development. It had attracted a number of objections, including from the Community Council, so that those making the decision on the application would be aware of the level of objection which had been put forward to that development, be it on the previous application as withdrawn or on the new one. So it wouldn't be a question of, well, you can't take into account anything the Community Council says because it's a new application. It's a material consideration in terms of the background to the application that, in my view, you could take into account in making a decision as a planning committee.
Thank you for that very detailed explanation on planning. Councillor Alexander.
Hi. Just going back to GPs, how is Brexit going to impact the availability of GPs and other health professionals and also education staff and the greater Midlothian economy?
In terms of what I'm probably qualified to answer, I'm happy to talk about the economy side of things. It may be that others... It could give a better, like the Director of Adult Health and Social Care and others could give a better view, and certainly Mary Smith give a bit on the education side. But in terms of the economy, all I would say is, I mean, obviously there's political views in relation to Brexit, but just from an officer point of view and what my experience is, the concern about those who are a part of the Midlothian economy is just uncertainty. That's what I hear from them. They're just uncertain about what the arrangements will be in terms of how they're going to be involved in you know, the markets, particularly overseas markets, in terms of who what will be the employment base. Those are the sort of issues which come to the fore. The effect on the pound in terms of its relationship to other currencies. All of those are the issues which are ones which are concerned them. So, in a word, it's uncertainty, and presumably they'll be looking for something in the next couple of years which they can be really clear on so they can actually plan ahead for their businesses. In relation to issues to GPs and education, I'll probably leave that for others to refer to.
Would you like to take up that point, Mary?
Thank you. We did have a report to last council on Brexit, and we keep trying to keep members updated. And all we're updating you is on the uncertainty. There's no definitive answer for anything, really. We're doing the school estate strategy, learning estate strategy, and one of the questions we asked, would Brexit have an impact on the number of people moving away from Midlothian, would that have an impact on our schools? Because you'll know that at one point we did have a large number of Eastern European pupils coming to our schools, So would that have an impact? And it certainly has had an impact on the east side of Midlothian, and a large uptake in our Catholic schools of youngsters coming from Poland and whatever. So I think to amplify Ian's answer, it's uncertain. In terms of teaching staff, we are in a fortunate position in our proximity to Edinburgh that people can travel easily to Midlothian. So we don't have a huge amount of teaching vacancies at the moment. At one point we had all the positions filled, and then of course teachers move other places over the holiday period. So we're not having a lot of difficulty in attracting teaching staff, Brexit or non-Brexit. So all I can say in terms of education, in terms of attracting staff to Midlothian at the moment, we're pretty fortunate because we're on the Borders Rail line, we're not far from Edinburgh, we're not far from the teaching universities and whatnot. But I can't give you much more assurance than that. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Mary. I'm sure that's as helpful as you can possibly be. Councillor Cassidy.
Could I just add to that Mary said, but about the doctors? The headline from the Times in July, one medic predicted huge exodus of his colleagues from England to Scotland after the Health Secretary announced he would impose controversial new contract. So I think we'll be safe in the future with doctors because they are going to come up here to work eventually because I think down south is closing down. Cheers.
I shall look forward to the massive influx of doctors coming north. I just had one other question, if I might, Ian. And it was just around, there's a marker there about welfare reform on page 63. And I assume it's more a financial marker. However, what I wanted to ask was, has there been any kind of wider modelling on terms of the local economy for the impact of welfare reform? I'm aware, for example, there's a rise in shoplifting recently, you know, which puts prices up in the local economy. We're just chatting about Dalkeith regeneration. We want to attract businesses in, you know, have people got money to spend in their pockets. Are we doing any types of modelling on the wider impacts and not just the impacts to the revenue budgets of the councils?
I'll comment as best I can, and I know that when Kevin speaks, he may want to ask him as well. The short answer is no. We haven't done, from my side of things, a wider assessment. What my team are doing is, the welfare rights team, is they've really got their hands full just trying to get to grips with it at the present time. It's a small team, but they're very well qualified, and they do very well, and they get good results. But what they're finding is that the complexities of trying to deal with universal credit, and often, understandably, it's people who are less advantaged, maybe had less educational opportunities, who are really struggling to try and come to terms with the process and to get to the end of what's quite a long process. And so really the focus of our efforts is being to ensure that we support them as much as possible, right through to tribunals if necessary and appeals, so that at least we've got people getting the benefits to which they're entitled coming in. And we do pick up wider elements in relation to if one of the staff is going in to meet the family, and there may be one particular individual who's seeking to ensure they get the right level of benefits, but there may be other issues within the family, maybe a young person looking for employment or whatever, and we can try and help them with that. So there is an element which we can try and go beyond the initial focus on the core work, but essentially it's just getting to grips with it day to day in terms of just getting us through the process. But Kevin may have a further comments.
Is there anything you wanted to add to that, Kevin? Or
in terms of your question, Councillor, no, we haven't carried out that work latterly. We certainly did at the outset of welfare reform, not just the impact on households, but the local economy too, which was quite significant in terms of what was extrapolated out. But the short answer is no, but we can certainly look to see if we can accommodate that in the paper that we plan to bring forward to Council in terms of the annual welfare reform update report that we do.
Thanks, Kevin. Happy to take that offline. I'm just very aware that sometimes there is an I'm all right, Jack attitude, and people don't often realise how they're affected when they're not personally affected. If there's no other question... Oh, sorry, Councillor Cassidy, and then we shall move on.
Thank you, Chair. I think relating to that is the 6 weeks incursion waiting for the benefits to come through for some of these people. And I think I've been hearing through police sources that there is a massive rise in shoplifting in this area alone because they can go to a food bank, but they can only go once a month. So they get their food, or once a week, I think, and they then run out of food. And how are they going to feed their kids if they're waiting for 6 weeks for their to be sanctioned? So I think it does all relate into the local economy. They're not able to pay rent, they're not able to feed their children. So we've got a problem on our hands here.
Yeah, I quite agree.
I can come back to this now or at my session, it's whichever. Certainly, in terms of Councillor Cassidy's points, that's certainly the evidence is coming through in regards to that. We certainly see an uptake relative to welfare fund on our crisis grants, and they have increased over the last 5 months of full universal credit being in play in Midlothian. And it's predominantly food and fuel are the primary payments that we're paying out on welfare fund. The disallowed period relative to making a universal credit claim, the first 7 days are disallowed and there's no compensation for that. What we are doing locally is, in terms of the remainder, is maximising our discretionary housing payment towards the offsetting and mitigating against that period that it takes for the universal credit claims to come through.
Councillor Hardy.
On the issue of welfare, obviously one of the best ways to take people out of the requirement for welfare is to provide jobs and good high-value jobs. Now, you touched upon the Signs Park and how that's one of our major employers in Midlothian for high-end, high-value jobs. Now, with a lot of kind of financial businesses and manufacturing businesses wanting to move away from the traditional sort of grey office structure in a city and to sort of modern office space in a sculptured, landscaped, semi-rural location such as the outskirts of a town, Midlothian is quite well placed to capitalise on that. What plans have been put into progress or engagement has been made with large firms and larger employers to perhaps attract some of them out to Midlothian rather than just focusing on the smaller employers and the start-up firms?
I mean, in the more sort of, I suppose, in the more passive way, we can just make sure that we provide for an environment that's going to be attractive, and in a way that's it's not just the availability of land and premises and servicing. It also means that the whole range of other things that we try and look to do through planning, so a road system that works, an education, or schools that are where places are available, even things which are, you know, more sort of, if you look at some of the evidence of what attracts people to areas, things like, you know, the recreation in cycling network, footpath network, these things start to take on quite a significant importance for those who are looking to come to the area. But the basic decision will, of course, be in relation to finance and in terms of whether it's economically going to be worth their while to come and relocate or to set up in Midlothian. And to that end, yes, we do engage with major companies as best we can. We do keep an eye on through the land agents. We do work with the major landowners like Buccleuch Estates, who've got a big stake in terms of land in this area, to try and see if there are ways in which we can seek to bring forward land which is allocated for development actually into land where you actually get buildings and jobs. We also, we do need to focus also on development of areas like Easterbush, because the potential there is substantial. The intention of the University of Edinburgh over the next few years, they have a very ambitious, and I think they've got a well-funded development plan to take forward a major development there, and we expect to see spin-offs from that in terms of smaller companies. We're just about to issue the final planning consent for major development at Edinburgh Technopole, which is land near the bush. We expect to see a number of small start-up bioscience type firms coming in, the people who are going to be building that, the investors say that they already have clients lined up to take those premises. So we're expecting to see that sort of work coming forward.
Mary, did you want to add to that?
Just to say that in terms of education and an aspiration to be a world-class, to provide a world-class education to our children, we have put forward proposals to Council to have centres of excellence, and our first one is Newbattle Centre of Excellence, and Kenneth and I were at a meeting, and Grace were at a meeting last night with Edinburgh University, and they're really excited to be working with us about what we can do. So when Newbattle opens, it's not going to open as a centre of digital excellence, it's about how we build that up. So they want to work with us, you know, in terms of not just digital, but also big data sets and how we can work with the data and how we can get our children engaged in that from primary right through to secondary, and have this centre of excellence in Newbattle, but other people can link into other children from across Midlothian and also Scotland. So this is really innovative work that we're doing with the University of Edinburgh. Then we're hoping to then agree a piece of land on the A701, looking at Pennycook and what we're doing about a school there, and link that to the science and STEM with Edinburgh University. So really, really positive work coming out of that last night. We've got a very short action plan, and then we'll build on that as we go forward.
Thank you both for those explanations, and I'm not surprised to hear that there's no magic bullet for jobs, and I'm sure that welfare reform will be a subject that we'll cover for some time. Moving on to item 5.6, commercial operations, page 77 of your packs. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Justin Venton. I'm the Land and Countryside Manager. I'm going to be presenting on commercial operations. The outcomes I'd like to draw your attention to in waste is that following a period of prolonged negotiation, the terms of a revised recycling contract have been agreed, which gives the council a stable outlet for material. That's taken over 2 years, and I think as long as we can keep the contaminant low, it should see a slight increase in income, or improvement in costs, I should say.
Sorry to interrupt, Chair. Can I ask the officers sitting on the back there to either whisper or take their voices outside, because you can hear them over the officer trying to give the report, and it's not fair on him.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Noted. Thanks, Justin, if you want to carry on.
Work is continuing to model various options for waste collection in the council to try and arrive at an optimum service solution in terms of meeting financial and service requirements. I'll give you a little bit of a land and countryside slant since I'm here. We're supporting the council's play strategy, and we have undertaken improvements at Lastway Primary School, Morriswood Primary, Danderhall Nursery and Bilston Primary School. And we've also obtained grant funding and completed park improvement works in Mayfield Park. The drive to secure external income from other sources is working well, and we're working with Hearts, the builders, Morrisons and McLaughlin and Harvey on contracts at present. Following extensive trials from the staff and trialling different machinery, we have introduced new grass ride-on machinery, which does give us flexibility to possibly reduce standards and frequency of cuts going forward, if that's required. Following a successful initial campaign, which included the staff and consultation. Moving on to travel services, the service has secured an additional £51,000 of external funding, which will allow for the installation of a further electric charging points across Midlothian during 2017-18. Discussions are ongoing to secure further funding to address a shortage of charging points across the Eastern Corridor. Also, an independent audit of fleet operation licence was completed by the Fleet Transport Association and found no areas of significant concern. And the next stage is to engage in an internal audit of the maintenance operations. Concerning risk assessment, the rollout of the health and safety management information system has been completed, with two minor exceptions of two schools. The council's moving forward with the procurement of the health and safety management system known as REVO, and this will call for The road service team won an excellent award in the Scottish Transport Awards for the excellence in travel information and marketing for out and about Midlothian project. This relates to measures which have seen an increase in sustainable travel to and from the railway stations along the Borders railway line. Continued progress has been made in regards to planning of extensions of walking and cycling routes linked to the new Borders rail line. Following intimation of the withdrawal of the traffic warden service, significant preparatory work has been concluded, which has resulted in a draft application being submitted to the Scottish Government to allow for the introduction of the decriminalised parking enforcement within Midlothian. And that's likely to be the end of this year. With regards to emerging challenges within waste, the recycling centre at Pennycook, the rates are relatively low. A report is to be presented to Council to give an update position following the granting of planning consent for the refurbishment for a refurbished site and to give the increased costs associated with the refurbishment, seeking a decision on the options of the site. Concerning road services, within the profession, professional staff side, a number of officers are reaching the latter stages of their careers, whilst a small number of positions have been addressed through a trainee programme. This will still leave a significant gap. Discussions have been therefore begun to explore options that are available to provide a more sustainable and cost-effective service with colleagues within East Lothian Council. And I'm happy to take questions at this point.
Thank you, Justin. That was really helpful, and particularly the update on parking, which I'm sure that all councillors receive lots of inquiries about. So that's really helpful. Is there any other questions or comments, Councillor Alexander?
Yes. Just referring to the first three paragraphs on page 77. Why are we not investing in the staff, i.e. the team as a whole that is driving the cost of saving strategies of efficiency, creating income to the council and moving forward with zero waste strategies and no waste to landfill rather than thinning them out?
Sorry, Councillor, are you finished? Can you put your mic off?
Oh,
thank
sorry.
You. Just so that I know that you're done, that's all. Thank you, Justin.
I'm probably not best placed to answer that, so I might ask my colleague in Waste Services to come back to you, because that was basically in relation to waste, why we're thinning staff. But we do have financial pressures, and we're all which may result in staff reductions. Sorry, I can't answer that any better.
We'll assume that conversation will be furthered offline. Councillor Alexander.
And Waste Services, number 1C, could you elaborate on this, please?
I can't elaborate on it too much. All I could say is that I think that some savings have been highlighted that going forward, and we are brought in a consultant to help model some of the routes, or we've brought in a system to try and model some of those routes to see if that's practical and feasible. going forward. So it's about changing the frequency of collection and then seeing if we can manage that with the assets we've got, or whether we may have to actually increase the assets even though we reduce the frequency of visits, because that may sound strange, but if you've got a three-weekly collection, a two-weekly and a one-weekly collection, there's going to be more peaks and troughs going forward, so it might actually result in more equipment. So it's quite an elaborate process that needs to be gone through. And again, my colleague in Phil Riddell and Waste would probably be able to explain that better than me, but that's the basis at the moment.
Councillor Alexander, followed by Councillor Winchester.
Going on to landscape and countryside, 2B, is this... Does this refer to the factoring of privately owned housing estates, and could this be rolled out on a larger scale to generate more income?
So we have several fronts we work on. We do act not as a factor but as a contractor to factors on a number of housing estates and schemes and industrial units, and we offer those services, and that's probably something we're quite good at as long as the area is quite large with economies of scale. But what we've been concentrating on more recently in the recent years is developing our soft landscaping and hard landscaping. So that's a one-off project to build for a housing estate or a school and landscaping the grounds, and we've been quite successful at that. And so we, for instance, have £230,000 worth of external work on our books just at this time with contracts we've secured with some local builders.
Councillor Winchester.
Thanks, Kelly. I'm just asking about Rosslyn Glen. It seems to be slipping again. And are there any plans to redo that? Plus, there has been an increase in the use of lorries, in fact, council waste lorries as well, using that as a route, as a shortcut between Raiswell and Rosslyn, I think. It's just been reported to me.
I'm sorry, I'm not aware of any plans for Rosslyn Glen, so I will ask my colleague Neil Dougal to respond on that matter.
Thank you. It might be an idea to have that conversation with all ward members, because not something I'm always emailing Ricky about. So if we take that offline, happy to proceed on that basis. Councillor Alexander.
Risk management. 4D. Could you give me a fuller explanation of this?
Yes, sorry. So this is the procurement of the new health and safety management information system. So Mid Lothian Council and East Lothian Council both use a Revos system, and I think this is referring to the fact that we need to secure or purchase that going forward for the next four-year period. So that's a system that we record all our accidents, our risk assessments, our safe systems of work, our COSH assessments, jointly across the council. We can have privy to other people's assessments, so that's avoiding duplication. I as a manager find it a hugely useful tool, and it does, you know, has automated systems for emailing managers that are responsible that they have to have their reports in or their responses in. So it's a useful tool for the council.
Thank you. That was very helpful. Moving on to the next report, which is Customer and Housing Services, page 91. Kevin Anderson.
Thank you, Chair. In the past quarter in Housing Services, we've seen the submission of the annual return of the charter. This is submitted to the Scottish Housing Regulator, and this year it was predominantly improved results across a range of measures which were being reported. We had our scheduled follow-up visit with the regulator about 2 weeks ago, where we were outlining, they were outlining to us in terms of the homelessness as the priority theme nationally for the coming year. In terms of housing services, we had completion of the new build developments in Gore Bridge and in Pennycook, and local letting initiatives were agreed at Council for the allocation of those two particular developments. Within homelessness, we've seen the reuse of the Poulton Centre, the former young people's accommodation at Midfield. This is now being used as temporary homeless accommodation. And similarly, we've had the handover of Pentland House for the reuse of that property in the past 2 weeks. And people will be moving into that from next week. In community safety, we've had the expansion of our mediation service. We now have developed that into the East and Mid Lothian Resolution Service, as we've contracted with East Lothian Council to deliver those services to that local authority as well. In terms of challenges, certainly in terms of the incident at Grenfell Tower, whilst we have no high-rise housing in Mid Lothian, we certainly anticipate that there will be learning issues for all housing authorities, which will stem from the Scottish Government Ministerial Group, which is ongoing in respect of building and fire safety standards, and indeed in housing, and indeed colleagues at Property Services have been liaising with our Scottish Government equivalent relative to the work that's ongoing in that regard. For community safety, we've been reinforcing the fire safety and personal safety messages in our range of media and our community engagement events. For housing services, as has been mentioned with a colleague previously, the City of Vigen deal was agreed, and housing was one work stream in terms of the components of that, and will contribute in terms of our ongoing commitment to the housing programme across Midlothian. In customer services, we completed our recruitment of the staffing structure, so phase one and two are completed. Phase three is due and scheduled to start, which is in relation to the library opening hours review and looking clearly in terms of continued digital enhancement and our online services being progressed there. And happy to pause for any questions, Chair.
Thank you, Kevin. Any questions or comments on these reports? No, happy to know. Thank you. Moving on to item 5.9, Finance and Integrated Service Support, page 119 in your documents. Gary Fairley.
Thanks, Chair. Again, the report highlights the progress in delivering strategic outcomes for the service and in turn across the council. And that, as you might expect, at present is around financial sustainability and using our resources to deliver against our priority outcomes. Key activities that are supporting that set out in the report: the financial strategy, the people strategy, and our emerging workforce programme and workforce plans, the Delivering Excellence programme. And those are supported by procurement digital strategies and the continuation of the integrated service support review, looking at how we provide services across the council. Touch on some of the achievements, there's many listed, but we've, in terms of accounts, financial statements for the year past are complete. We've seen the first monitoring report for 17-18 to council. And we're heavily involved with our auditors EY at the moment in concluding the current year's audit, 16-17. We had the financial strategy report to council in June, and the next report will come to council at the end of the month. Quite a key report in terms of where we are in terms of the progress towards balancing next year's budget. We made good headway in embedding our new people management policies and getting the most out of those. Our focus now is on bringing forward a workforce plan report to council in September as well, which will highlight challenges around the workforce, some which Justin articulated earlier, around making sure we've got the skills and the capabilities to deliver services in a financial environment which sees less and less resources. Some really hard work and dedication by digital services over the summer, Really good progress with the SWAN network, so that's putting the broadband capabilities into our school through the Scottish Wide Area Network. And we've got the successful implementation of the digital estate across the new Roslyn and Paradykes Primary School. And some really innovative technology in there in terms of delivering services within those schools. Team continue to have a focus on some key issues, activity below the waterline, if you like, and preparing for the GDPR regulations, and also making sure that we continually maintain our cyber resilience. I suppose on that point you've seen, you know, it seems like every week there's a public sector organisation hit with some form of cyber attack. Council is still very well protected, but there's no absolute guarantee around that. It's a matter of not if we're hit, but when. In terms of the emerging challenges, it's money and money. The financial strategy will consume a lot of time and energy and focus over the next few weeks, and indeed right up and through to probably February next year, in terms of how we respond to the financial position. We see the programme for government published later today. That might give us an insight into where Scottish Government will the direction of travel, leading on to the next key event, the Scottish Government's budget and the local government settlement, which we're expecting mid-December. And then, as members, you've got the requirement to set your budget by the 11th of March. I touched on earlier, workforce plans, our biggest cost. We will bring forward a corporate workforce plan or the emerging corporate workforce plan to Council later this month for members' consideration. And continually to focus on delivering the digital strategy, using technology to drive cost out of the business and also to deliver, particularly in our school estate, the technological services and foundations that our children will need to develop and learn and go out into the workforce later on in life. That's a very quick overview, Chair. Happy to pause there and take any questions on the report itself.
Thanks, Gary. Any questions or comments for Gary? Councillor Smale.
Gary, in our discussions earlier this year, we discussed the problem of preparing the draft accounts, and it appeared that the software supplier to your department had fallen down on the job. Are you now happy that we have the appropriate software to have a full and accurate and indeed fair value report of our balance sheet?
Yeah, the implementation of a package within the main financial system was not as smooth as we expected, but we did implement and we managed to get the information we needed to complete the accounts. We've still got to do a debrief on that. Our focus at the moment is on the audit process, and we'll do a debrief and then look at how and what we need to change in terms of preparation for the next financial year end. So, okay at the moment, but still work to do.
Thank you, Gary. Okay. Moving on to the final item, 5.10, Property and Facility Management, page 131. Gary, if you could, I'm sure you caught the earlier conversation. Sorry, different Gary. Is to pick up, Councillor Cassidy had a point about Dalkey Town Centre. It would be helpful if you could pick that up in your address. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'll do that. I'm just taking the report as in the order it's presented. Within building services, we have achieved 100% of our housing stock meeting the SHQS standard. Now, that's been achieved for some months now, and it's a case of maintaining that. We're always adding to the stock, and obviously there's an ongoing rolling programme of improvement or replacement there. To that end, we've got a five-year business programme which takes us up and beyond the 2020 date where we have the SHQS standard to be maintained too. That'll take a budget of around £60 million to take us right through to 2035, so there's a fair bit of capital tied up in that programme. Sticking with money, we've got a total funding package of £6.6 million for energy efficiency projects that we've secured since 2011. And this year in particular, we've managed to receive a £500,000 contribution towards the external wall insulation scheme which has been in various locations within Midlothian. With the expanding demographic population, we've seen an expanding school estate, and it's important that we have a real understanding of what that estate looks like, both existing and potentially new. And to that end, we've looked to set up a learning estate strategy board, which pulls together various services and makes sure that the capital investment programme coming forward is one that's robust and indeed addresses the issues ahead of us. Other highlights there, Rosalind Paradise Primary Schools, whilst this report reflects quarter one, I'm pleased to say that both of those are now complete. Paradise was a particular struggle to get to the final date. In fact, we finished the building on the night before the schools went in at 10:30 that night, so it was a real effort by all parties involved to get that finished. If you haven't been there, I encourage you to do so. It's quite a change in direction for the council, because it's taken a primary school and it's attached to a leisure centre there. But we've introduced a community cafe, we've introduced a soft play area, we've introduced the NHS onto the building as well. We've looked at an open library scenario where pupils and the public mix, and indeed there's no restriction in the flow of people through that area. But most importantly, the whole process was done in real proper consultation with the community. It was one that started some time back, and the community who have now gone into the building have given us the feedback that they've seen their expectations exceeded, which is really pleasing from my point of view, because the consultation is a hard process and you can't please everybody all the time. But when we get that sort of feedback, it's encouraging that we're doing the right thing and hopefully on the right path to capture as much as we possibly can when we're doing these new buildings. The UN works up on this floor have continued. We've obviously reorganised the members' accommodation, and we're looking to the area beyond the doors at the back here, and that will result in bringing council staff officers up to this level, freeing up the ground floor, where we'll be able to shuffle staff from other buildings and hopefully again minimise our cost in those areas. In facility services, catering continues to perform above the national average in the censuses that we've had. Both the primary and high school uptakes have been very pleasing. The high schools, however, do face ongoing challenges, and we continue to see that just with the local high street and fast food shops close by, and that's a challenge we're not going to see disappear, especially with the changing agenda for the Nutritional Acts getting tighter and tighter on what we can feed our children and what we should feed our children as well. In terms of trying to become more commercial and win work in an external competitive market, we've seen success there where we've now got the cafe contract at the National Mining Museum. We have cleaning and caretaking contracts with the Melville Housing Association and Rise that I've previously mentioned. But we've also added to that the NHS up at the Lonehead Centre that we've just opened at Paradise. At Saltersgate, we had to increase the security there just to safeguard pupils, staff and the facilities. There was an increasing undertone of difficulty there, so we have done some works in there to increase that security just to protect all concerned. Property assets. The initial public engagement sessions have been completed for the Stolpool and the Lady Victoria Master Plan in Newton Grange, attended by 72 people, but again, hopefully, again, we get good feedback from that, which can inform the shape of things to come in that area. Similar to the Learning Estate Strategy Board, we've set up a Capital Projects Board, which looks at not just the school estate, but the wider estate and the investment that's needed with the increasing demographics, putting pressure on all services concerned. So anything that requires capital investment, we'll go through that board and hopefully see things balanced and that we spend the money and report back to council in the right areas. In sport and leisure, we've had a very active summer. We had a full programme of Summer of Sport for 2017 with all the activities listed in the report. Plus football festivals for 100 primary 7 girls, which is really developing the balanced agenda for both boys and girls through the primary schools. Ageing Well, I'm pleased to see, won the Active Volunteering Award and annual awards. And again, that's an area where we're really desperate to see more investment in there, because the returns that we get are very beneficial, keeping prescription costs down and indeed referral to doctors and the NHS down as well. So it's an area I would like to see expand over the coming years. Turning to emerging challenges, as always, as just noted by the other Gary here, money is an issue throughout all of our services. We are trying to reduce operating costs in all of our areas, but we do have an expanding frontline service as a result of increased population, more houses and the likes to service as well. The major works programme, the capital I've mentioned several times now, we currently are in the middle of a £250 million capital expenditure on our programmes. So, you know, take the likes of New Battle High School, the Paradise, the Roslands, the Gore Glens and the likes. We all these schools, plus other areas that we've been spending our money on, all of that is against the backdrop of an increasingly challenging marketplace for construction. There's less and less trades out there to fulfil the jobs that are needed. And that's just because of the financial downturn previously, seeing construction companies going to the wall, nobody investing in apprentices and the likes as a result, the amalgamation of some of the bigger companies coming together, they've offloaded a lot of staff. So there are less tradesmen, unfortunately, out there. And as a result, financial pressures come with the supply and demand of those. So we do have that difficulty. But I'm pleased to say so far we've not seen our budgets breached. So we just have to keep a very tight handle on that one. Within facility services, the current challenge is to merge the facility service staff and sport and leisure staff in our major hubs so that those teams come together and again give us efficiencies coming out of it. The early years expansion programme, at present we don't know what that really looks like. We know it's coming and we know we've got to deliver it by 2020, but the shape of it is still a wee bit ambiguous. Now, in some terms it's just a set of nursery places for the kids coming through, but does it include meals? Do we have to have that all indoors? Do we have to provide breakfast clubs, school clubs and so forth? So the shape of it is still to be established, and as a result of working with our education colleagues, we will have a very tight deadline to deliver that for the 2020 outcome that's required. So we'll be working with our colleagues within the government and indeed SFT to try and facilitate that as soon as we can, but it's a real challenge ahead for us. In property assets, we've re-rated the estate, again, to try and keep our costs under control and make sure we don't have inflating rate spills there. And the land deal for Shawfair continues to be tricky, insofar as we are the middle party between Shawfair LLP, the developer, and the Network Rail organisation who own the land, and we're trying to facilitate that. And I believe that we are actually starting to see material change in the attitudes, and indeed that delivery of that deal will come forward soon. We're finalising a partnership approach with the City of Edinburgh Council for an agreement with the contractor at Miller Hill to utilise the heat and the energy output there, which will then hopefully see district heating and potentially other energy sources being used in the Shawfair area and beyond that. Within sport and leisure, the leisure management system and the till systems, again, just about to go live, which is fantastic news from my point of view, because it gives us real live data to work with, and we can start designing that service around the real needs of the residents of Midlothian. And then finally, just as I said earlier on about the Ageing Well, but the Midlothian Active Choices team in its entirety, it's a challenge for me to try and secure that funding, because it's partly funded at present and by external sources and partly funded within the council, and I would really dearly like to see more investment going into that way, into that area. I'll pause at that and take some questions.
Thanks, Gary. Any questions or comments? Councillor McCall.
Hi, just a quick comment, just to give some positive feedback on the
the Midlothian Active Choices. One of my friends is doing that at the moment, and she said it's the best thing she's ever done, actually, to be shown how to do exercises specifically for her, and she's now full of motivation to go on with the rest of the course. So just some positive feedback for you there.
Good to hear. Councillor Smale.
Your report on Dalkeith Campus, which has been suffering vandalism and dangerous behaviour, and the PPP provider has taken this up. Is this so serious that the PPP provider is looking for some financial consequence from the council? And is it so serious that perhaps the community police team should be involved?
In short, the answer is yes. We saw a real escalation of that towards the tail end of last education year. It culminated in an incident where we had one of the staff's moped being taken into the field and set alight. Now, if that's not serious, then I don't know what is. We've had any number of doors kicked in. We've had bottles smashed in the shower areas. We've had items ripped off the walls. We've had ceilings destroyed. It's really quite a catalogue of particular wanton damage, and there's just no particular need for it. We've addressed it with our education colleagues, and the school's been helpful in trying to identify the perpetrators and indeed get the parents involved as well. The police have been involved. And we do hope that this new term will see a change in direction on that, and it may just be the outgoing pupils that were causing the issue. But it did raise its head, and the PPP contractor rightly brought it to our attention that it was excessive damage rather than just ongoing maintenance.
So the conclusion is that Midlothian will have to pay up on this occasion?
There will be a bill for the excessive damage, yes, there will be, yes.
Thank you. Councillor Cassidy.
Just to ask, Chair, when will the property asset register be available for viewing? We were told 3 months ago it was coming soon, and we've never seen it yet.
Garrett, so it would probably also be helpful if you could pick up Councillor Cassidy's other question to save him repeating it.
Absolutely. The property asset register is live. It's on our website. The Community Asset Transfer, or the Community Empowerment Act, obliged us to do that, and as a result, that is online. The facility is actually an interactive one where you can go in and look at the maps of the areas, and it actually highlights each of the individual properties that we have, and it gives you links to areas and things like that, Colin. So it's all there and available. In terms of Dalkeith Town Centre, we are obviously in a position where we would desperately like to bring that back to council now. I've been under some pressure to do so for some time, and I'm not trying to make excuses. All I'm trying to say is that we're looking at this with careful and due consideration in terms of the financial position. I know that our finance colleagues are finalising their part of the report that would go in front of yourselves, and as soon as that's appropriate, it will do so. But obviously there's an enormous pressure on the staff resources that are looking into the same report as they are with the rest of the budget information that's coming forward as well. So it's, from a property perspective, we are as good as finished. We just have to conclude that report with the financial input.
Okay. Any other questions for colleagues? Okay. Thanks for your time today, colleagues. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.